League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello friends, welcome to your midweek edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast. I am Mark Keith, I'm your host. This show, of course, brought to you in association with our friends at Manscaped and also Ginger Pickle. If you like your pickle ginger, Google Ginger Pickle and they'll sort you right out with your digital marketing. I am joined today by the two best kings, the kings among kings, the men among men. I'm going to start first of all with the man who manned Manly from 8 a.m. in the morning till about 11:15 p.m. at night on Tuesday. Our deadline day blog, and that man, of course, is Andy Warren. Hutchie, have you recovered? You had the day off yesterday to recover mentally and physically. You were broken at times, I sensed, from some of the things you were sharing. I particularly enjoyed the update that said there were 31 minutes left until you could stop the blog. How's things?
You weren't factoring that in when you said you wanted to be me on Monday, were you? that wasn't part of it.
What I did find interesting though, Hutchie, is obviously I scrolled back through a lot of the blog at times, and I saw in there was a part where you said you wanted my money.
Yeah, I was. I can't remember what all of the options were, but what was it? Some kind of niche. There was three options. This was when things were getting desperate. Three options. You can either have Heath's cash for salary.
Yeah,
500 grand to go and cover bowls for the Times,
yeah.
Or I can't remember what the other one was, but obviously you earn more money than all of those, so
you'd be so disappointed if you suddenly
naturally go for yours.
You'd be like, oh, this is really deflating. And hey, I haven't got any money because I spend it all on spurious things like new teeth and cigars and things that just sit in a box and I just like to open every now and then, look at.
Mate, I'm the king of things. I've got thousands of pounds worth of football shirts that sit on a rail doing nothing. That's my
true.
I like that.
We all need little hobbies, don't we? Little faults in our character that we splash cash on. From deadline day blogs to sobs, Stewie, we bonded earlier this week over an episode of The Last of Us, which you messaged me and pre-warned me. You said you're going to have to be emotionally prepared for this next episode because it's a bit of a killer. And it was. I watched it last night. I don't know if any of you, I'm sure a lot of you are watching it. I've never played the game, so I haven't got any emotional connection to it. But this latest episode, which is essentially a love story, hit me right in the feels, Watto. I was sobbing like a baby.
Mm. Yeah, it's very good that if you haven't watched it, the new Sky Atlantic show. I did play the games, but you could watch this without playing them, and you could watch that episode 3 as a standalone episode. There's a lot of talk about it on social media, yeah. Be emotionally prepared. I watched that on my day off, just in the middle of the day, and had a little cry to myself, Mark, which is important sometimes.
Absolutely.
I won't give too much away about it, but yeah, get on The Last of Us if you haven't started watching that.
I was ugly crying at it, Stewie. You know, I was doing that thing where I'm trying to pretend because I was watching it with the missus. I was trying to hide the fact that I was sobbing from her, but I couldn't because my nose started to run. I was getting all mucused up. It was a dreadful thing, but a very emotional and thought-provoking episode, I thought. And I'm looking forward to the next one. Also, before we move on, Hutchie, we have to clear something up, which came from the last video that we did. We had a message on the YouTube comments from a Nicola Spencer who just put Andy Warren or how cute, or R, I suppose that is, how cute. It seems that you've got an admirer, Hutchie. So I'd imagine you're telling her, get to the back of the queue.
Yeah, thanks, Mum. yeah, no, very. Look, that's what it is, isn't it? You just deal with that. You just deal with it and move on, don't you? Thanks, Nicola.
Another day in the life for the Hutch man. Another thing that was another day in the life, and thank God it's over. January's finished, boys. I'm sure we can all agree that's a blessed relief. Deadline day on Tuesday. Not a lot happened, as expected. The only real news was outgoings. Hutchie obviously ran the blog. We've spoken to him about it, and we had a chat on Monday's show and in a preview video and all sorts about that. But we haven't heard from Stuart Watson really about it. So we start with you, Stewie. The window as a whole, four ins, four very good ins, Luongo, Hurst, Broadhead and Clark, and then a bunch of exits on loan. Happened as expected to Burton late, of course, on deadline day. Tete Yenge went out for his first taste of men's football at Northampton. And then the likes of Matt Penny, Elkin Baggett and Edwin Agbaje, we already knew about, going out on loan. As a window as a whole, Stewie, what have you made of it? How would you grade it for Town?
Well, how would it... bordering on an A+. You couldn't have asked for a huge amount more, could you, from this window? Getting the business done early, tick. Sorting out the positions that needed sorting, tick. Getting a few bonus extra youngsters on deadline day, so starting to build for the future as well. That was quite interesting in itself. Very, very good window. January is a notoriously hard time to do business. Mm. And as much as there's always this clamour for new shiny things at this time of year, it isn't Football Manager. It's hard in the real world to get deals done early. Especially, I think Kieran McKenna had pointed out that we've just had a World Cup and a winter break, and that has a knock-on effect with Premier League clubs holding players back that little bit longer than usual. So for Ipswich to have done everything by January 19th was very impressive. And I think the players that they've signed are going to improve the starting 11 and the squad as a whole. So, very, very, very good window.
Hutchie, gone are the days when we used to have to try and get excited about signing Leon Best in the January transfer window. Those were terrible days. Stu's giving it an A there. Would you agree with your work husband?
Yeah, you can't knock all those things that Stu just mentioned. The way the business was done, I think, is A+. The aim of this window is to get Ipswich Town promoted. So I'm going to hold back a little bit on the A pluses. I'm going to go in the A- category. Still, on paper, they're fantastic deals for the future beyond this year, but the aim of it is to get Town promoted. So I'm going to go A-, but with some room to grow. But in terms of how the business was conducted and how it looks, there's nothing to knock. There's nothing to knock about it at all.
Mm. Shall we talk about what actually happened, the little that did happen on deadline day, Hutchie? You spoke quite a lot, and we've spoken about this on the podcast a few times as well. Gassana had me. The only place he could go was back to Burton, and he duly did. And you were especially pleased that happened. He just needs to play, doesn't he? He's not really going to play that much if he stays at Town as it stands. But at least going back to Burton, a place that he knows, a place where he scored goals, the best scenario for him probably for the rest of the season.
Yeah, there were a few different... In English football and European football as a whole, the only thing he could have done is go back to Burton. There were scenarios where he could potentially have gone to a league that runs in a different time frame, so something Scandinavian, maybe North American. I don't think sending him to some far-flung club for a few months would have been a better bet than training with Kieran McKenna in Ipswich every day. I think that would have been better for him. But I think going to play football for Burton is certainly better than that. It's not as if he's 17, 18 here. He's 22 years old, has been playing regularly, has to carry on playing regularly. Not going to happen here. They like him. They'll welcome him back in the summer with another 15, 18, 20 games under his belt and crack on from there. But common sense, I think, I'm pleased for him.
I suppose when I mentioned Burton, I should have mentioned Corey and Darby, shouldn't I? He's also gone to Fleetwood. He ended up from Burton on loan, yeah. Stewie, you tweeted something which I thought was good. You said, has there ever been a case where a player is signed for a team on one deadline day, like Gassan did back in the summer, and then departed and gone back to the team he signed from on the following deadline day? Can't have happened very often.
No, and I'm not going to do the groundwork. I am prone, as Andy will tell you, to going down some deep, deep rabbit holes in terms of finding football stats, but that's not one I'm prepared to. There's a lot of work that will go into finding that out for a slightly... Oh, yeah, he is. He is the first. He probably... Look, someone may have done, but I would imagine that's very, very rare. On the face of it, it looks like a bit of a disaster signing someone and then them going back to whence they came. We had it with Janoi Donassian, of course, going back to Accrington on loan. And we know all about the Donaissance, of course. And let's not write Gassana had me off yet. They signed him for a reason. They like him. He was always going to be a bit of a project striker. Yes, he's not 18, 19, but he's still young. And he had a pretty false start, didn't he, with that foot fracture, which kind of set him back. So there's circumstances as to why he's found himself at this point. I think it's a whole load of common sense for him to go back to Burton and get some games. But I don't get the sense that he's completely written off just yet. It's just he's just not the man for the here and now.
Okay. Certainly not a man for the here and now, but maybe a man for the future is Titi Yengi, Stewie, sticking with you, who signed a new deal. He's this kind of almost a unicorn style player, 6'5" striker or winger, versatile attacker, had a good time in Finland on loan. So he signed a new contract and now he's gone out to Northampton for the first taste of English senior football, aside doing well in League Two. Have you seen Tete play? Do we know anything about him other than what we know stats-wise, what he's done? He clearly physically has some tools and has some ability. Good move for him, do you think?
I have no idea if Titi Yengi is a good footballer because I haven't seen him play. It does slightly amuse me sometimes when people have quite strong opinions on players like this. Like you say, they become almost mythical. I'm sure the fact that he's come from Australia, he's had a foreign loan spell, he's 6'5" tall, all of those sort of things. And we're all prone to it as football fans. You get sucked into that and they become slightly sexier. If his name was Harry Smith and he'd come through the youth ranks or something, you wouldn't have the same sort of chat around him, I'm sure. But look, it sounds like he's done quite well in Finland. What the top flight of Finnish football compares to at English level, I'm not sure. Slightly surprised that he's got a sort of a top-level League Two team sort of looking at him on the basis of what he's done so far. I suppose in this day and age, everyone will have probably been able to see video footage of what he's been doing away in Finland. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he does next at Northampton, a team that are pushing for automatic promotion in the division below. So one to keep a little eye on, for sure.
And John Brady, the Cobblers boss, said there was a lot of interest in him, Stewie. I mean, I think you wrote something about links to other teams, didn't you?
Yeah, Leighton Orient, who are top of League Two, were one that certainly made an inquiry about him. They've obviously got Idris Ilmazuni there as well. McKenna had talked about there being lots of interest from home and abroad in him. So what he has done out in Finland has obviously caught a bit of attention. So yeah, he's obviously someone literally just looking at his stats and his height and everything that maybe brings a few different types of qualities. For those that don't know his background, he sort of came over from the Newcastle Jets in Australia on trial. That was kind of through a link with Andy Costin, who's one of the new sports science guys that has come in sort of during the Game Changer era. Came in on trial, did quite well. Yeah, we'll see where he goes next on his football journey.
Exciting. Hutchie, have you got any thoughts on that? Have you ever seen Yengi play? So I know you've gone to a couple of youth games, no?
He's been in Finland. So no, never seen him, I don't think. Not for any substantial period of time anyway. I think he did make the bench once for a Papa John's game, but didn't get on. So maybe I've seen him warm up. But just someone that's, I think someone with those kind of physical tools is always going to attract some level of attention for a start. And he's got some stuff on tape, some scoring a few goals in a team that nearly qualified for Europe in the league in Finland. So I think those two things combined make him a pretty low risk, high reward signing for a team like Northampton, whose manager is Australian as well, I believe. So he may well know a little bit more about him than others would have done at that level. So, interested to see how he gets on.
Okay, just by way of rounding up this deadline day chat then, four players in, which obviously is the most interesting thing. You've had a chance to see all of them play a little bit so far. And I know you've spoken about Minty Hutchie, as being your favourite, and clearly Stu's professed a deep love already for Harry Clarke. Are you able to talk about each of them and what you think they're going to bring to Town?
I'll start with Massimo Luongo if you want, just to talk about him. He's probably the least exciting of the four because he's going to play the least, but I don't think we should underestimate how well Ipswich have done to get a player of his experience, 30-odd international caps for Australia, loads of appearances in the Championship, was a key influential figure at a Sheffield Wednesday side that stormed their way up the table in League One in the second half of last season. And Ipswich have been able to attract him to come and be fourth choice central midfielder. Hmm. I mean, that says a lot about the pulling power of this football club at the moment. He's been pretty honest in his interview to say, look, I might play 1 minute, but I'll have to make sure that I'm sort of ready and I'm playing my role behind the scenes as well. I think he'll be a good dressing room guy that can bring a bit of experience. I think he takes that little bit of pressure off the shoulders of Cameron Humphreys, who has shown that he can be trusted, that has had a really exciting breakthrough season. But I think it's a lot to ask him if it came to a real crunch stage of the season and Sam Morsi got suspended or Lee Evans got injured, to ask him to go in again and play week in, week out during a busy schedule might be a big ask. So I think that was really important to get another central midfielder in and to get one of Massimo Luongo's pedigree. I think it's not to be underestimated as a deal, that one. Obviously, the other three deals are more exciting, but I want to give a bit of credit to that deal.
I think we might see more of him than people think. I think he's going to ultimately probably slot in above Humphreys on some kind of depth chart, if there was one to be existing in the short term. Cameron Humphreys is the long term for Ipswich Town, but they're very different players. Very, very different players as well. So I think Luongo, like Stu says, is more suited to what's to come for Ipswich in certain situations. So I think we'll see a decent amount of him. And he looked good in those few minutes against Burnley at the weekend, didn't he? He certainly added something when legs were tiring and things were kind of draining a little bit for Ipswich. He added something. I think he could. I think he'll start the replay, and then we'll maybe start to see a bit more of him from there.
Yeah, he could be a cracking bargain signing, couldn't he, given his pedigree and what he's done at this level? Actually, there's three signings left. Do you want to take one of them and talk about them at length? Do you want to take your boy Minty or Hurst or Clark?
Let's do them in order. I'll take George Hurst next. Obviously, we've spoken about him a lot over the month, but the thing that enthuses me most about him is, one, we've kind of started to see him work his way into things now at Ipswich. I've enjoyed that, but I think the thing that enthuses me most is how much he was wanted and how much stock Kieran McKenna, the coaching staff, the recruitment staff have put in him. They clearly are very, very big fans of George Hurst. They've trailed him throughout the summer, top target then, and have been working clearly to get this deal done well before the January window opened. So that is what gives me the most heart. He's a player that looks like he's going to fit Town's system. He's a big boy, but he's very mobile for it. Very mobile. And I think him and Ladapo are going to dovetail quite nicely. Another big thing is he's fired up Freddie Ladapo. Just him being here has fired up Freddie Ladapo. So still waiting to see Hurst truly click and get going, but there are signs that might be coming. So they've added what they wanted, and that has to be a good thing.
You got any early thoughts on Hurst, Stewie, from what you've seen of him so far?
Wasn't immediately taken by him, if I'm completely honest, in those first couple of appearances. But to be fair, he's not played a lot of football in the first half of the season for Blackburn. You were looking at it thinking it took him half a season to get really up and running for Portsmouth. Ipswich can't really afford to waste weeks, months on getting a striker up to speed. But against Burnley at the weekend, I thought, OK, this is why he's been brought in. And as Andy says, you put your trust in Kieran McKenna and his staff, who have obviously carefully identified him to fit in. I think what he does is he's a good all-round striker, and he's got different qualities to Ladapo. I think he's one that wants to run in behind and play on the last shoulder, whereas I think Ladapo's instincts are to kind of drop and link and play with his back to goal a little bit more. So different weapons, bit of versatility. We're talking a lot about these players being in direct competition. I just think they're different qualities of player for different types of games. McKenna's seen that League One throws up different challenges every week. And sometimes you need different tools in your armory. So he brings that. I think what both him and Clark do is they fit into the style of play and the system and the team, but they also add a bit of something in physicality-wise. I think they both added an extra bit of height and aerial threat in both boxes as well, which is good. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing him sort of hopefully go up through a few more gears in the coming weeks.
Right, okay, sticking with you then, Stu. Do you want to? We know you love Harry Clark, and we know Hutchie loves Minty Broadhead. So, do you want to talk about your separate, as it were, your divergent loves? You do Broadhead, and Hutchie can finish with Clark. What have you made of Broadhead so far?
Well, look, Nathan Broadhead is the most expensive of the four signings. There's a reason for that. It's his age, it's his profile, it's what he's done in his career so far. He has to be, as much as I've kind of, my heart has been drawn towards Harry Clark. The head agrees with Andy in that he is the most important of these four signings so far, because I think he can be the difference maker in these games where Ipswich have drawn or not been prolific enough and not been clinical enough. Got promoted from this division last year, was winning some firm admirers in the Championship with Wigan in the first half of this season, and from the very first minute he stepped onto the pitch for Ipswich, you could see that he is someone that's going to add something a little bit different. He's direct, he's a dribbler, he's got drive, he wants to shoot whenever he gets the ball. I think Ipswich have been a little bit shot shy at time from outside the box. As much as they've got good attacking players, maybe they're all a little bit technical at times, and sometimes you just need someone that plays off the cuff and tries to make something happen. And Nathan Broadhead is a high quality player that can hopefully again add something a little bit different to the party.
Go ahead, Hutchie, bring it home. Any Broadhead thoughts, and then the boy Clark, the homecoming, the good story.
Yeah, it's with Broadhead. It's the directness that I liked before they signed him, and I've liked what I've seen since they've signed him. Town have lacked dribblers throughout my time covering them, really, if I'm completely honest. I think that's why Mustafa Carriol, I enjoyed him so much, despite him being quite a limited football player in many ways. He just dribbled with the ball. It's why I like Teddy Bishop, because he dribbled with the ball. You have to be able to, you can't just tip-tap your way around League One. You have to attack the box. And Nathan Broadhead attacks the box. I've used that expression a load of times. He attack that box. That's the way you're going to score. Attack the box. And I'm sure if you shoot from outside the box as much as he wanted to, you're going to get those little bits of luck that Kieran McKenna's talking about. That nice deflection that leaves the goalkeeper standing with his arms like that as the ball goes the other way into the net. You don't get that luck unless you're shooting. So that's what I like about Broadhead. There's nothing not to like about the Harry Clark signing, is there? It's got the story, and he's got the ability clearly to back it up. Physical tools, technical tools. He's got a little bit of everything. It's a real deal for the future and for the here and now. And I think a lot of people are going to really, really enjoy watching him for hopefully quite a long time.
Mm. The fact that Broadhead and Clark are actually signed Town players as well under, you know, a decent long-term contract is exciting, is it? Put aside the fact that they're signed for seven-figure fees as well, which is madness in League One and a sign of how things are going at Town. The fact they're under contract and are Town players is fantastic. Just by way of reference,
you'd imagine with Harry Clark that the data dashboard just one day sort of set off a whole load of sirens in Mark Ashton's room where Harry Clark just ticked every single box. It's like the fruit machine sort of rolling up all three lemons or whatever, you know, because not only has he got the homegrown story, but it's a very specific position that he's been recruited for. Oh, he's played He's played right wing back, right wing, and centre half in his career, so he fits exactly the sort of the athletic profile of what they want, the tactical profile, the personality profile, everything. So the stars just completely aligned on that one. I wasn't, when we were talking after the Broadhead signing, do they need anything else? I wasn't convinced. I was of the opinion the squad was maybe getting a bit bloated and that would cause some issues. Andy, to his credit, sort of said, well, maybe someone just to keep Janoi on his toes has maybe just been fading a little bit. You ask a lot physically of people in that position. And I thought, well, if the right player becomes available, then maybe, well, the right player became available and Ipswich are in a position to make these things happen if they so choose. So, yeah, for me, that was the icing on the cake of that transfer window.
I love that image as well, Stu, that you just conjured there of Ashton sitting in his office, feet on his desk, and then suddenly there's a fruity going off. He's going, we've got a bingo. Let's go and get Harry Clark. One day we have to see this data dashboard. I know he's probably not going to show us, but even if it's off the record, I'd love to see it because it'd be fascinating. By way of wrapping up this deadline day chat then, boys, I know it's always interesting what goes on around League One. You were both keeping an eye on that, Hutchie, especially on the deadline day blog, because you were doing smoke and mirror stuff to keep it busy. Are there any signings either of you seen who thought, wow, that's a good signing, that's impressive, or maybe someone like Sheffield Wednesday, for example, who really have done nothing in January, and you thought that's rather underwhelming? Either of those two extremes.
The one that interested me the most was Mometi leaving Wickham, yeah, actually to go to. I know it's probably not as direct an impact on Ipswich as some of the others, but yeah, that interested me, going to Bristol City. It's probably a club that suits him and his ability a little bit more, but that's what made him interesting at Wickham. I've got to say, when Ipswich played Wickham, I wasn't impressed at all, particularly. I don't think he did an awful lot in the game, but so everyone that's seen him over the course of the season has said that he's a really, really good player for this level. Interested to see what he does in the Championship now. And again, of no impact to Ipswich whatsoever, Fleetwood interests me. I think we might see them kind of rocket up from lower mid table to upper mid table by the end of the season, potentially with Marriott, Stockley and Corey and Darba as well. That interests me a little bit.
You say it's no impact on Ipswich Town. We do go there on the final day of the season. Just chuck a bit of extra narrative in there, all these ex player narratives that we've been talking about. Sheffield Wednesday were pretty quiet, but I think they lost Mark McGuinness and they've replaced him like for like, but with a more experienced model in Aidan Flint, who's someone who's loads of experience, aerial threat, scores goals with his head. So I think they've done quite well to replace them. I know Darren Moore was talking about wanting to add more in January, but I think they're in a similar position to Ipswich where they've got real depth through their squad. Barry Bannon and Byers, I think, have both sort of overcome injuries recently, so I wouldn't read too much into their so-called disappointment in January. Derby not signing a striker, I think, is a good thing. Paul Warne made it very clear that he wanted a midfielder and a striker. He got his midfielder in Harvey White on loan from Tottenham, but didn't get his striker. Note that David McGoldrick sat out the FA Cup game the other night with a muscle niggle, which we all know that David McGoldrick's sort of injury history. So if he was to kind of break down and they lose him at some point, they might look a little bit thin up front at some point. Barnsley did three deals on deadline day. I don't know loads about those players. Bolton, I think, have mixed things up a little bit. Afolayan left, but they've brought in quite a few in January. So I'm not writing off Bolton and Barnsley yet. I think they're both very good sides that could still sort of creep up on the rails.
Yeah, a couple of strikers at Bolton. Neither were on deadline day, but they were kind of leading into it. They signed Adebayo from Burton, who was scoring a lot of goals for them, and Cameron Jerome as well. Everyone knows about Cameron Jerome, so yeah, they've added that little bit of strength. I think they've signed a centre half on loan from Man City as well, who they seem quite quite taken by. So
where did Ethel Lyon go? I missed that. Obviously, there's interest there because he tore town to shreds not too long ago. Where's he gone?
He's gone to St. Pauli in Germany. Oh. He's gone abroad.
Okay. In Hamburg. Lucky man. Okay. He gets to live in Hamburg or Bolton. Hamburg, please.
All right, then. Just finally then, boys, bringing it back to town. The squad is set now. We know exactly what they've got for the rest of the season, the last 18 games of the season, the promotion push, the real business end of the season. When you look at this squad now, there's no excuses there. It's simply down to the players now to deliver what should be possible to go on a bit of a run and really challenge for those top two spots.
Yep, strong in every position. Two players or more in every position that you trust to start games. So yeah, it's the squad is there. Time to run the gauntlet and deliver it.
Do you sense, Stu, obviously we always flash back to the period under Mick when Town were surging towards the top of the Championship and they didn't strengthen from a position of strength. Looking back now, even with the benefit of hindsight, you can't say we're going to be looking back in 6 months and going, well, they didn't do enough in that window. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there are times when you can be flying high in a division, but I think everybody sort of knows that some cracks can be papered over a little bit. I think back to, you know, even the first season flying under Lambert. And I think when you keep sort of saying, and the great thing is they've not even got going yet. They've got some more gears to go through, when in reality there isn't more gears to go through. And maybe the results have been masking performances. There was maybe a little bit of that. Maybe my mind's playing tricks on me a little bit, thinking back to 2014-15. But that was a fairly sort of functional side under Mick McCarthy, wasn't it? It was Tab and Anderson on the wings, and it felt like that would have a limit to what it could do. But having got themselves in such a good position, they needed to do more in January, and they didn't. This time around, it's a little bit different. They're when you say adding strength to a position of strength, I think there was so much good about this side already. I'd still be feeling reasonably confident about it, even if they hadn't done what they've done this month, because I would say actually the performances have outperformed the results in some ways. They've left a lot of points just out there when you look back through the season. So, I'm feeling quite good about the months ahead. I know at the moment it feels like Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth and others and Derby are never going to lose again, but you know they're just in their red hot form at the moment. Ipswich have hopefully had their little bump in the road. And once these new signings get up to speed and you look at these fixtures coming up, I think the last two performances, Morecambe followed by Burnley, are going to give a bit of confidence. Plenty of the bottom six sides coming up. That big game against Sheffield Wednesday in the middle. I'm excited about these coming weeks, that maybe the momentum train gets going again.
You know, the one thing that, at the end of every football season, the captain hindsight hats go on. And the only thing that I think the hindsight sayers will throw out potentially, and I think there's already reason to believe this isn't the case, but I think if it doesn't go how we all hope it goes, I think the thing that will be discussed was George Hurst the right striker? Could they have gone someone more proven than George Hurst? I think that's what the conversation might be if it doesn't go the way we hope. But I honestly think the amount of work that's gone into looking at him really gives me confidence that he will add what they wanted a new striker to add. If Macaulay Bonn goes and scores 9 goals for Charlton, should we have signed Bonn? Should we have pushed for Clark Harris? Actually, right now, I'm more enthused by the player that Kieran McKenna loves. But I think if there is some hindsight chat, it might link to that.
Is that where your A minus came from, where you were kind of leaning towards with that?
No, not at all. I think I like that they've gone down the route that they've gone down by someone that they love. The A minus is that the whole aim of this window is to get them promoted, and don't know if that's happened yet. So this is the A minus is the kind of the room to prove that it was right. if I was grading the work that they'd done and the speed that they did it at, is A plus. They got what they wanted and they got it done. It's just this transfer window is to get Ipswich Town promoted, and they haven't achieved that yet. So can't have full marks just yet.
Until the exam is passed and the work is done, and then you get an A plus from Hutchie. Right, then that's deadlined out of the way then, boys. That we'd have to worry about that now until August, praise be. January deadline, January windows generally I do not like. I'm sure you probably agree with me there. Shall we talk then, Stu, about what you just teed up, the month ahead, starting with Cambridge this weekend? Because you look on paper, this is a real opportunity for Town this month. They've got a game against Sheffield Wednesday, which is probably the biggest game of the season so far, might be the biggest game they have left. But they've also got games against four sides. One's in mid-table and three are really struggling. So a huge opportunity to grab momentum and bank some points. And that all starts at Cambridge on Saturday, boys. Shall we talk about that? And then I want to get you to predict the month ahead like I've done this morning, possibly with a lot more knowledge behind you and fewer Ivan Drago references. Cambridge United, 23rd in the table. Haven't won since Boxing Day. Won one of their last 11 games. All sorts of bother at the Abbey Stadium. Stewie, we've got to be open and honest about this. This is a game that Town have to win.
Yeah, must win. Cambridge have only won 5 games at home this season, and they've been against the likes of MK, Burton, Lincoln, lower sides. Their record against teams in the top 6 is 2 points out of a possible 24. But there is a couple of results in there that jump off the page. They've had a couple of 0-0 home draws against Plymouth and Bolton. So it just shows you on their day, and as we've seen with Ipswich, on the day, you can just come up short in these tricky games, as Ipswich have found. So we've got to make sure Ipswich have had too many of those days now. You can maybe get away with 2 or 3 of those sort of days over the course of a season. Ipswich have played those cards now against Fleetwood, Cheltenham, Lincoln. They can't afford any more of those again in these sort of games. So, have to go and win this now, because we're talking about stringing wins together.
Yeah, Cambridge also shipped 5 twice in January. They lost 5-0 at Sheffield Wednesday and lost 5-1 at Shrewsbury. So they're a team in no sort of form at all, Hutchie. Clearly, Town have got to win. What do you do? It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Because before the draw with Burnley, this, you would maybe have approached this game in a different way in terms of team selection. How do you, you know, you've got the Burnley game in midweek to go FA Cup replay wise. Does that have any impact on how you approach this game in terms of team selection? No,
your strongest team goes in. What you think is the strongest goes in this. No question about it. And I think it almost picks itself, if I'm honest. The big fear I've got with Cambridge is their goalkeeper, who's a really good goalkeeper, Mitov. Good day from him. Frustration. Joe Ironside up front, a striker who is a bit of a can frustrate as well. Physical. They've got some good players. Smith, Nibbs. There's the Jack Lancaster technical kind of players. They've got a few of them. Good manager. If it's going to go wrong for Ipswich, it's going to be a frustrating one rather than Ipswich being beaten, I think, like properly beaten. It will be a horrible frustration, but I don't think it will. I think Ipswich will go out strong. Obviously, Clark comes back in. Broadhead starts. And they go all out, and I think they win it quite comfortably.
It sounded like Mick McCarthy back in the day talking about opponents. Good manager, good players, upset results, etc. Bloody hard match.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the goals they've been shipping of late. They've signed a few players in the January transfer window, but a couple that jump off the page is a couple of centre-halves. They've got signed Ryan Bennett, the ex-Norwich centre-half, who's 32, and Michael Morrison, Suffolk-born, Haverhill boy. They got him on a free from Portsmouth as well. He's been around the block and played a fair bit of championship football. So they're two hardened centre-halves. I think they've switched from a back four to a back three. Diggers sitting in front of them. Paul Digby is their captain as well. So I think they might be sort of just trying to sort of shut up shop a little bit now and make themselves difficult to beat. And as I say, they've had those couple of nil-nils against some of the higher teams. So, yeah, I just hope that Ipswich now, we talked about the Broadhead X factor and some different qualities that Ipswich have got, that they've got enough to kind of to unlock the door in this one.
A few hairy arses in there. There's a hairy arsed team now.
Is that on their data dashboard, do you think?
Yeah.
must have hairy arse.
It's like the data dashboard is like when you go and try and find a new house on Rightmove or a new car on Auto Trader. You're putting in like engine size, colour, mileage. You're getting really specific on the nitty gritty, whether you want a garden, how many bathrooms, all of that. And then you press search and it just comes up with one.
Harry Clark on that on the Auto Trader front is like all the other ones are coming up. Yeah, it's got the right engine. Yeah, the mileage is good. It's red, and then all of a sudden, like a nice silver one comes up. It's like that's the Ipswich Town factory.
Or it's the house, and then your missus goes and she just loves something like, even though you can change the color of the walls or the garden or whatever, you know. I'm gender stereotyping here, but if it's anything like my wife, she'll fall in love with the aesthetics of it rather than the practicalities of the house. And Harry Clark had the factor to win over the heart as well as the head.
The Watsons would have bought Harry Clark, wouldn't they? He ticks all your boxes. Yep, solid walls, no holes. Nice insulation in the loft. Yep. Although he hasn't got any insulation actually in the loft, but
yeah,
he could if you wanted to. I think
primary school down the road, good access to local shops.
Yeah,
wow,
garage,
very, very grown up chat. So all being told, then Cambridge United boys, what are we saying? I'm going to get you to predict the month ahead. I've gone big on Cambridge United. I've gone 3-0 Town win, which now, having listened to you boys talk about it, I think I've gone too big. Because you've made me doubt what's going to happen. But Hutchie, do you want to say?
Nah, they'll win, mate. I think they'll win 2-0.
We should mention. You say that the team picks itself. What would the team be then?
For me, the team is Walton, Clark, Wolfenden, Edmondson, Davis, Morsi, Evans, Burns, Chaplin, Broadhead, Ladapo.
Yes, go on, Big Fred. So I've gone 3-0. You're saying 2-0. Stewie, what are you saying? Would you agree with that team?
I'd also got 2-0 in my mind. Biggest question mark is probably the one that you paused on when you were going through that team, is whether it's Ladapo or Hurst up front, because both of them have had really good games in their last two outings. I guess that might be kind of thinking what's most suitable against Cambridge. I just talked about the type of centre-halves that they've got, whether you want runners in behind, that Hurst is maybe has a bit more of that aerial threat against them. I don't know. Or do you have Ladapo and try and do your most dangerous work kind of away from their box a little bit more? I don't know. But that's probably the biggest question mark. I know you've probably had a conversation about the goalkeeper in the previous chat. I think it's a legitimate conversation. I see some people get a bit now outraged that you can't. How dare you even question Christian Walton? Where's your loyalty? Like, if it was any other position on the pitch and one player had slightly dipped below their levels and another player had come in and had a really good game, we'd be having that debate, no question about it. So Christian Walton is not impervious to that debate. But all of that said, do I think he's got more than enough credit in the bank to go again in this game? Absolutely. He's got to be your goalkeeper for Cambridge. I think Halaki will go and play up at Burnley. And we'll see how that conversation goes. But nobody is beyond having a conversation around where they're at. But I'd be going Walton, definitely.
Yeah, no player can be undroppable, can they? Especially in a successful side. There has to be competition for every position. You can't have a player who, regardless of what happens on the pitch, won't be dropped. Okay, so we're all saying win. Have you got a £1 million pick for me, Hutchie, before we move on?
Yeah, I have actually. Clearly, both Freddie Ladapo and George Hurst, I think they're both going to play in every game. Each will get at least half an hour. I think they're both going to score in this game.
Okay. Now, obviously, I've been way too generous recently when I gave you 7-1 for just Freddie to score.
Have you paid yet?
What? I think my phone.
You owe me £4 million.
Mate, I'm still trying to ship my kidney on the black market, all right? Once that's gone, I might be able to do something, all right?
You tried to sell me a bike the other day, didn't you? Which I never fully got back to you. I don't think I'll take the bike, but if that was trying to raise money?
The bike is worth about £2 million, so that would have Yeah, okay, not going for it. No. I'll give you, so you reckon both Ladapo both and Hurst are going to score. I'll give you, I'll give you 16 to 1.
Mate, come on. What? £1 million on that.
What are you happy? Is that, again, you saying that's too generous?
I'll put £1 million on it, please.
Okay, 16 to 1. Deary me. All right, then. Maybe I'm going to have to get out of this bookmaker's business if this goes tits up. So we're all saying win against Cambridge. Yeah. Let's move on, and I might be having to sell this house to pay this next
year. Yeah, and the rest.
And the rest, yeah. And my drugs empire. Let's move on to Sheffield Wednesday, shall we? Which is, in my preview, I've just capped up the big one. Certainly the biggest game of the season so far. Arguably the biggest home game they've got left against a side who are red hot in contrast to Cambridge United. They've won 5 league games in a row. They've not lost in the league since October when they lost to Plymouth. They've only conceded 18 goals all season, which is by far the stingiest record in the league. They are, by all accounts, flying, boys. Slightly complicated by the fact, obviously, that they're playing Plymouth this weekend, which is clearly a huge game as well. Then they've got to go to Fleetwood in the FA Cup. And there are things around the edges. Barry Bannon missed most of January with injury, returned as a second-half sub in their FA Cup game. Whether or not he'll be back up to speed by next Saturday with a hamstring injury, you never know. Start me off then, Hutchie. Sheffield Wednesday, how are we feeling about this game? Because this is a game in isolation against a team like Wednesday who are in such great form. You would say a draw would be a decent result. But Town don't want draws. They have to win these games.
They do. There's a lot that can happen between now and that Sheffield Wednesday game, obviously, with Cambridge and Burnley in the Cup. Lots can change. Wednesday play Plymouth before then. I still think a draw is okay for Ipswich. You definitely cannot lose. You can't lose it. I think a draw is okay. It's not what they want. And I think you'd find if it was 1-1 with 20 minutes to go, McKenna's going to be pushing to win it. But it's going to be a really, really difficult game. Aidan Flint just fills me with dread, the existence of him, because he's had a really good record against Ipswich in the past, scoring goals, him and Ahikwe at the back. I think it is going to end in a draw, sitting here 2 weeks before it happens. Not 2 weeks, is it? A week. I think it is going to end in a draw. I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Okay. Stewie, I appreciate that. Obviously, you're the calm, measured, both of you, calm, measured, logical voice of journalism. And I'm asking you to predict games that are weeks in advance. And realistically, without all the stories around it going into it, it's hard to do. But give me your gut feeling. I'm actually saying 1-1. I feel like it was going to be a draw, but my heart told me that Town are going to find a way to win this. I said 2-1 win for Town. What do you reckon?
That's exactly where I'm at. I think head says draw, heart says yeah. I like Ipswich are getting going again. I got over a few injuries, getting up to speed, new signings are bedding in nicely now. I'm hoping the pot comes nicely to the boil. In time for that one. It requires them to go and win at Cambridge tomorrow. It requires them to have whatever happens with the result up at Burnley, just again put up a decent showing, and then carry that into the game on the Saturday. I'm really pleased that Wednesday have got their replay as well, so that's kind of like for like in terms of preparations for that game. Why not? Portman Road's going to be absolutely bouncing for that game. Ipswich beat Derby at Portman Road earlier in the season. I'm putting them down for a win, Mark.
What are you saying score-wise?
2-1.
6-0.
6-0, imagine that. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Okay, so me and Stu both got them winning both. Hutchie's saying draw against Wednesday. The next game is the one for some reason worries me, boys. Bristol Rovers away on Valentine's Day. Joey Barton and all that. A massively informed striker in Collins. And my thinking in the predictions that I've done is that I think, as I've just said, they will beat Sheffield Wednesday. And then I'm slightly concerned about after the Lord Mayor's show, subsequent adrenaline dump, dip in performance at Bristol Rovers, which is not going to be an easy game. Bristol are, 12th and still with a very outside shot of the playoffs. So I have a fear that this might be a slightly underwhelming, scrappy, horrible draw on Tuesday night. Should we start with you, Bing, as you said two wins like me? How do you feel about this one?
Yeah, same fears about this one that you've had You've had the Burnley game in midweek. You've had the travel for that, all of the big adrenaline and everything for that game. And then Bristol Rovers away is not the ideal fixture to be playing a few days later on a midweek night. They've had some good results this season. They've got a striker in form in Collins who's scoring and assisting at a really good rate. You making us predict all of these all the way through?
I am, mate, yeah, because the people want to know and it's a bit of fun, isn't it? I know it goes against your kind of serious, logical...
Draw.
The other thing, Bristol Rovers, of course, you look at it on paper, they've just been absolutely humped 5-1 by Morecambe, the same Morecambe side that Town beat 4-0 a few days before. But I'm saying draw, you're saying draw. Hutchie, what are you saying?
I've got it down for a draw as well. Difficult place to go. The atmosphere is quite a good atmosphere there. That they can get whipped up. I think it's going to be a draw as well.
Okay, so Hutchie so far has got win, draw, draw. Then it's the Stuart Watson derby. Forest Green Rovers. Big dunk in the house, Stu. This is going to be an exciting time for you. Forest Green are awful. Bottom of the league. Haven't won in God knows how long. Yes, big dunks come in. They've just conceded two in stoppage time to lose at Shrewsbury. Their record away from the new lawn is awful. They conceded an average of 2 goals a game away. For every single reason you look at that, and it looks like a Town win. But obviously, they ain't going to come to Portman Road and try and play with Town. They're going to park the bus and make it very, very difficult. Hence, my Ivan Drago reference, because Town simply must break you. They're going to have to break Forest Green Rovers. And I think they will. 2-0. Hutchie, what are you saying?
5-0.
5-0?
Yeah, genuinely.
Serious?
Yeah. Wow. I think this could be a cut loose.
I'm loving that.
Look, for me, that comes on the back of two draws, which might feel a bit frustrating. But yeah, a cut loose, big, thumping home win.
Stewie, what are you saying?
Yeah, I think following this narrative that we're painting so far, that we've had the high of Sheffield Wednesday, then maybe after the Lord Mayor show of Bristol, then there might be a bit more of a nervy atmosphere. As we've seen, you get the big atmospheres for Sheffield Wednesday, then it'll be Forest Green and it might be a little bit quiet because people will be expecting them to smash them, or maybe a little bit nervy, and it could go one or two ways. If they get an early goal in that game, then I can see what Andy's just said. I could see them having, you know, that'll be the day it all clicking. Or equally, if it stays 0-0 for quite a while, the atmosphere could get a little bit edgy. But whichever scenario it is, Ipswich win that game.
And more importantly, Stu, are you going to break all etiquette and protocol and try and get a picture with Big Dunk, your hero, your childhood idol?
Yes. Yeah, I think I probably will, actually. Yeah.
Let's hope it's not 5-0 in that case, because I'm not sure we'll be open to pictures.
Yeah. Maybe do it try and get it done pre-match. So there were a couple of pictures were taken with Vincent Kompany on Saturday.
Okay. Well, hopefully Town win and you get a picture with Big Dunk. That's the best outcome we can hope for from that game.
Fists up. Then,
absolutely fists up. Although you probably don't want to raise your fist too close to Big Dunk in case he takes it as provocation. Puts the nut on you. Final game of February is at MK Dons. Town are going to have about 30,000 fans there by the sound of it. MK Dons struggling, 20th in the league. Just got a new manager. Obviously, Liam Manning has gone. The new boss, I think, has done 2 wins in 7, so not really kind of changed things too much. And they're awful at home, MK Dons. They've got a terrible home record. I think they've only won twice at home all season. They only scored 10 goals at home, probably because they keep letting so many away fans come in. This has got to be another win, hasn't it, Hutchie? To end the month,
and another win to nothing as well. I've got this one down as a 2-0
win. I think I said 3-1, just because I was getting too optimistic. Stewie, got to be a win.
Yeah, got to be a win. I think they will get a win. They'll be back by. How many tickets have they sold now? What's the allocation?
4,000 with another load request. I think they are capped at 7,000 by the local authority, from what I gather, for 4 away fans. So I imagine it might get to that level again.
Okay.
Yeah, whether it gets to that or not, but I think that will be a factor, and I think Ipswich will go and win this game. 2-0.
Whatever. go 3. Like, go for 3-0. Add another one on.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of the predictions then. So me and Stu have gone exactly the same in terms of outcomes. We're saying win-win, draw-win-win. Hutchie, you're saying win, draw-draw, win-win. We're all saying an unbeaten month of February, though, and a lot of points for Ipswich Town. And at this stage of the season, it has to be that, doesn't it, Stewie? There is no room now for slip-ups. They've got to catch at least one of the sides above them, who Sheffield Wednesday have got a game in hand. They're going to have to be almost perfect, really, for the rest of the year.
Yeah, almost perfect is the term. There is little room for slip-ups. It's not going to suddenly end the season, or we're not at the kind of mathematically impossible stages or anything like that. There'll be a lot of twists and turns to come, but Ipswich can't leave too many points out there and be left playing catch up too much. So what I think all three of us have outlined there will leave them firmly in the hunt by the end of the month.
Cambridge United 1, Ipswich Town 0.
That's going to be fun on Monday, isn't it?
I shouldn't joke about that. Boys, it was nice when it lasted. Right then, that brings us to the end of the predictions. It brings us to the end, really, of the show. We should also mention, though, Stewie, something you did yesterday, because that has relevance to tomorrow. Ipswich Town in the FA Youth Cup tomorrow night, hosting Liverpool at Portman Road. Big game for the youngsters. And you spoke to a pair of twins who play in that town side. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, identical twins, no less. Harry and Finlay Barbrook, who people may have seen on the team sheet for the under-18s and the under-21s in recent years, both integral parts of this Ipswich Town team that's made it through to the fifth round of the FA Youth Cup to play Liverpool, the team that knocked them out in the semi-finals a couple of years ago. It's been quite the journey to get to this point so far. They came from 2-0 down to beat Huddersfield. They beat Nottingham Forest on penalties in the last round. This is going to be a major test against Liverpool tomorrow night. Crowd of about 1,500, I think, so far for that game. It'll be an eye follow as well. But two very nice young men, the Barbrook twins. So we had a good chat about their sort of academy journey, their types of players they are, and a lot of twin chat in there as well. Identical twins fascinate me. So it was a chance to sort of chat about their relationship and how they've helped each other as footballers along the way.
Did they at any point finish each other's sentences, Stu?
There was a lot of, that sort of telepathy of, one would start a sentence and then the other one that sort of would seamlessly take on the answer, and they would sort of, I didn't have to do a lot of questioning. They were sort of batting the answers sort of back to and fro between each other. But yeah, two really nice, polite young men. Who I came away from that interview sort of really, really rooting for them. So, that will be online and in print tomorrow.
Mm. Did you try pinching one of them to see if the other one felt the pain?
I didn't, no. No, maybe I should have done. But they, helpfully, Harry has grown his hair out. Harry's the left back. Finlay plays in midfield, but Harry's grown his hair out a little bit more. So you can kind of... it was a bit easier to sort of identify the two of them, both in interview and I think for fans kind of watching from the stands as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting little story with those two. I think they've got a real chance of getting some pro deals at the end of the season by all accounts. So not many twins that make it in football, is there?
Nope. Right, and we'll look out for that. As Jerry says, that'll be in print and online tomorrow. Shall we finish, boys, by playing Guess Hutchie's Shirt? This one is, I like it actually. It's mainly black with a flash of blue and white across the chest, a blue collar, blue sponsor. Sponsor is Think Blue, fittingly. I'm awful at this, so I'm really leaning heavy
absolutely
on you.
Absolutely no idea. I can't. What's even the see what the shape?
You
Ulls,
what? Okay, so it's a German shirt, is it?
Yep.
Is that that looks like the lion from the. Like a, is that a lion?
Yep.
On the badge?
Yeah.
Sort of a similar lion to the England badge, basically. Imagine one of the three lions, but just one of them. No idea, Hutchie. You're going to have to put us out of our misery.
Ah, okay. 1816 Munchen. Another new one, Hutchie, or just one you brought to the front just for shits and gigs?
Just one I brought to the front. This is actually my brother's.
Ah. Is it massive then?
No, it's pretty standard size. I think I bought this for him because on my stag do, which he was on, he was there as well. We went to Munich for it, and I think it was either the weekend before or the weekend after his birthday. So I bought it for him then, but I've been looking after it just because I think he moved house and It's been living on the rail for a little bit, so
fair enough. Is it a large boys? Is that what it is?
Honestly, mate, you're fascinated by that. That is what the sizes were in football shirts.
You couldn't say it now, could you? You couldn't say large boys now.
This is a large adult male.
You'd have to say body positive boys now, wouldn't you?
Do you know what that one is?
Oh, it's a beauty. That's Inter Milan, isn't it? I was gonna say that. That is a beauty. I was gonna come on to that while I was digging myself a hole.
It is a beauty. That's a 2005 Nike Total 90.
Bring that a bit closer, just so we can finish with a beautiful shot of a classic shirt. That is sexy, isn't it?
It's a nice
bit of R9 era. That was it.
I think he might have left by then, potentially.
That is still a beauty, though. Absolutely beautiful shirt. One day, hope maybe in the summer, we'll do the shirts of Hutchie's life. We'll go round. We'll have me chatting to you as you pick through your rail, pick out some classics. Right then, friends. Bring us to the end of the show. Anything else to mention, boys, before I do my shambolic outro?
No other business.
No other business.
Excellent. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Then an hour of podcast gold. We've talked about deadline day, what the boys think about it, who the best signings have been, what they're going to bring to the side. We've predicted Cambridge. We've looked ahead at February. We all think Town are going to go unbeaten in February. So all then that's left for me to do is to remind you to support our sponsor. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery. They just launched a whole new range of stuff. So get involved there. And also, to help with your digital marketing, Google Ads, SEO, any of that, get involved. Ginger Pickle. If you like your pickle ginger, Google Ginger Pickle and get involved with Tony Southgate and those boys. Also, friends, just a reminder, we're still looking for the furthest flung KOA listener. We've got Ed in New Zealand. That's a long way away. Back in the day, I know we had Monty out in South Korea. I'd love to know if we've got any listeners even further afield. Have we got a listener, for example, in North Korea? That'd be a story, wouldn't it?
What is the furthest point from here? Like, what?
It's got to be... geography is terrible, but New Zealand's got to be pretty close, hasn't it? Japan, we've got a few listeners in Japan.
We'd be banned in North Korea, wouldn't we? Like, there'd be like a blackout on us.
Too provocative.
Isn't there only about three sort of Western films that they're allowed to watch in North Korea, one of which is Harry Potter, I believe.
Is that right? I don't know.
Which one?
Yeah, they're sort of like state-approved films. I imagine probably the early one, you know, nothing. The later ones maybe. A bit dark. Look that up. I'm pretty sure that's the case. But yeah, we're not getting through the internet filters in North Korea. We talk about balls too much.
I've just googled furthest country from the UK, and it is New Zealand. So we're gonna have to micromanage this. Where in New Zealand are you?
Well, Ed was saying he listens while he catches a ferry from the North Island to the South Island, or vice versa. So I don't know which technically is furthest away. New Zealand, anyone that's far afield or in an unusual location, let us know. I know we've got listeners all over Europe, but even further afield would be great.
Or a tiny little remote island.
Yes.
You're on one of those somewhere. That'd be good.
I remember being more amused than I should have been when I was on holiday in the Maldives and I checked our pod demographics. And sure enough, there I flashed up as a listener in the Maldives, like 0.0001% of our listenership was in the Maldives.
Was it so you?
There we go. That was me. Yeah, I was listening in the gym. Yeah, yeah.
it was the net guy next to you on the treadmill. Like, hang on,
I recognise your voice. Can I shock you, boys? Just by way of finishing in an Andy Warren style. Never seen a single Harry Potter film. Never read a single Harry Potter book.
That's mental.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know how that's even humanly possible.
Oh, because I'm not 10.
I'll let the listeners deal with you on that one.
All right, then, friends. So we all reckon Town are going to go unbeaten. We all reckon they're going to win at Cambridge United this weekend. All that's left then is just the minor task of actually going and bloody doing it. We'll be back next week to break it all down. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you next time.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.